For Parsha Shmini, we have six separate Divrei Torah, and an interesting thread that will continue throughout is some amazing messages that we learn from what we would think is otherwise unlearnable, to learn from Karbonos and the Halachas of Kashrus. Amazing messages is, in itself, an amazing thing. So we're going to start towards the beginning of the Parsha. We are now discussing the inauguration of the Mishkan, the eighth day. Moshe Rabbeinu builds it and it stays up. And it says as follows, as part of the bringing of the Korbanos on that day, Kach lecha egel ben bakar lecha tas v'ayu le'ola. We have it's Perek Tes, Pasuk Beis, and Pasuk Gimel, we have a discussion of what Korbanos Aharon the Kohen will bring and what B'nai Yisrael will bring. And they bring different Korbanos, and we're going to compare the egel. Each of them had to bring an egel. An egel is a young bull. If we think about the word egel, it's famous, the egel hazav, the golden calf, the sin of the golden calf that both Aaron and Klal Yisrael were involved in. Now Aaron, in bringing his korbanos for the inauguration of the Mishkan, he had to bring an egel, that's that calf, and as a korban chatas, on the other hand, B'nai Yisrael had to bring an egel as well, but not as a korban chatas, as a korban ola. And the question is, why does Aaron have to bring his egel as a chatas, while B'nai Yisrael have to bring their egel as an ola? So the Kli Yakar answers beautifully. If we go back to the Cheta Egel and look at the specific involvement of Aharon and compare that to the involvement of Klal Yisrael, when it came to Aharon, his Chet, his sin of the Cheta Egel, his involvement was doing an act. He facilitated the bringing of the Cheta Egel, the bringing of the Egel as an Avodah Zarah. However, his mind, his Machshava, was not at fault. He actually intended to delay them. He intended to his actions to be L'shem Shemaim. He only had positive intentions, but his sin was in his action. On the other hand, Klal Yisrael, not only did they sin in act, but they sinned mentally, but machshava, with their thoughts as well. And accordingly, we now have a divergence in the type of korbanos that they bring, because when it comes to a korban chatas is brought fundamentally on an improper act. The action was wrong, and we contrast that with the korban ola that is brought fundamentally on improper thoughts. And accordingly, when it comes to Aaron, his egel representing the cheta egel is brought because he did an act improperly in bringing the cheta egel, bringing the egel in the sin of the golden calf. Accordingly, he has to bring a korban chatas because the korban chatas is brought on an improper act, a sinful act. On the other hand, Klal Yisrael sinned not only in act, but in thought as well. And accordingly, their egel was brought as a korban ola because it's the korban ola that is fundamentally brought on improper thoughts. So that is why we have the divergent korbanos that are brought by each, because of the differences in their involvement in the cheta egel. We are now moving on to the second Dvar Torah. We are moving to Perek Yud, Pasuk Tet Zayin, and there's a discussion about one of the korbanos during the Hakamasa Mishkan, the inauguration of the Mishkan, and Moshe inquired. He inquired incessantly, insistently, about what happened with a certain korban. We don't have to go into the details of the korban. We want to focus on the language here. It says, Darosh, Darosh, Moshe. Darosh, Darosh. It has the double language there. Moshe inquired vigorously, incessantly. So there's actually a Mesorah that this is Kan Chetzi HaTorah. This is halfway through the Torah. We're in Sefer Vayikra. We're approximately halfway through. We're halfway through. That's the Mesorah. This is halfway through the beginning of the Torah till now, and there's another half coming up there afterward. But we're going to give a different explanation. What does that mean? That this concept of Darosh, Darosh, looking, inquiring deeply into something, that is Chetzi HaTorah. So, in fact, one of the reasons, the fundamental reason, one of the main reasons that people sin, why they do Averas, because they act in haste. They don't weigh things properly. They don't think what's the proper way to act, what's the proper thing to do. They don't investigate things properly. They act with haste, without forethought. And accordingly, We have here a lesson. Moshe Rabbeinu, Darash, Darash, Moshe. Moshe looked in depth. He had to think about something, and he had to deal with an issue. And we see that Moshe Rabbeinu, he looked in depth. It wasn't as is commonly done that people act on their first thought, their first desire, but rather it tells us, Darash, Darash, Moshe says you need to look in depth at something. And this, says the Drash Vayiyun, is Chetzi HaTorah. This will avoid half of the problems in sinning. This Kiyum of the Torah, Kiyum of half of the Torah, is dependent on when we are acting, we have to think with forethought and not with haste. And that's why it says, Darash, Darash, Moshe. We learn from Moshe Rabbeinu that he looked in, he analyzed in depth, what's the proper thing to do, not in haste. This is Chetzi HaTorah. This will enable us to be Mekayim Chetzi the Torah. It will enable us to avoid half of the sins when we act in a proper, thoughtful way. And in fact, continues the Drash Vayun, there's a pasuk in Tehillim, it's Perek Yud, pasuk Yud Gimel, it says, Al meh ni'etz Rasha Elohim. Why does the Rasha, the evil person, blaspheme God? That's the question. Amar belibo lo tidrash, because he says in his heart, don't investigate. So what's going on in this pasuk? So the pasuk is asking as follows, why does a Rasha blaspheme HaKadosh Baruch Hu? It's because, and this is the answer, Amar belibo, he says to himself, the Rasha internalized it, and it's his philosophy, don't look into things. Don't analyze things so much. Just fulfill your dreams. Fulfill your desires. There are no limits as to what you can do. You want to do X? Do it. You want to do Y? Do it. No limitations. Don't think about it. Don't think about repercussions. And that's why the pasuk tells us, lo tidros. This is what causes the Rasha to blaspheme God, because he's not thinking. But in contrast, we learn from Moshe Rabbeinu, Darash, Darash. What we have to do is analyze, think, forethought before acting, and that is what will enable us to be Mekayim the Torah, to be Mekayim the Mitzvahs. Vort number 3, we are moving on to the introduction to the laws of Kashrus, Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud Aleph, and the introduction to the halakhas of Kashrus are as follows, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe vel Aaron, Leimor Aleihem. God says to Moshe and to Aaron, say to them, what's this Leimor Aleihem? Say to them. So in fact, we're going to hark back to a Pasuk in Shmos, the beginning, towards the beginning of Shmos, Perek Beis, Pasuk Zion, that we have Moshe Rabbeinu was floating on the Nile, a little baby, and Paro's daughter saves him, and she goes around and she tries to find someone who can nurse this little baby, and it wasn't successful, Chazal tell us. In fact, Miriam approaches the daughter of Paro and says to her as follows, Ha'ilech v'karasi lachisha me'nekes mina ivrios, the Egyptian women, they're not working out here, so maybe I can call for you a woman, a Jewish woman, who can nurse the baby. And Chazal tell us that it teaches us that in fact, the daughter of Paro went from Egyptian woman to Egyptian woman to in order for that Moshe Rabbeinu to nurse, and he didn't want to touch any of it. He didn't want to drink treif. And the Chazal tell us, why not? Because in the future, Moshe Rabbeinu would be speaking with the Shekhinah. Somebody's going to speak with the Shekhinah. You have to be absolutely careful that no tarfus, nothing treif enters the mouth. Accordingly, Moshe Rabbeinu refused, absolutely refused to nurse from any of the Egyptian women. And in fact, the Kedusha slavery of Rav Levi Yitzchak Meir Berdyshev says this is a message not only to Moshe Rabbeinu, but to each and every Jew as we are introducing the halachas of kashrus, what's considered kosher and not, what's considered kosher meat and what's not, that we have to be absolutely careful that nothing treif comes into our mouth, meat, non-meat. We have to be absolutely careful. Every Jew. Why every Jew? Because there's a pasuk in Yoel at the beginning of the third parak that says, in the end of days, v'nibu b'neichim u'b'noseichem, that each and every Yid will have nevuah. Each of us will be speaking with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, but if we eat treif, we will not be zocha to that. And that's why we have a remez to that. And our pasuk says, the Kedusha Slevi, Vaydebar HaShem, El Moshe, V'alon, Leimor Aleihem. We have to inform Klal Yisrael in the future, Leimor Aleihem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be speaking to them as well through this Nevuah. That's Leimor Aleihem, a remez, a hint to the future that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will speaking with each of us. And accordingly, we have to be careful as well, this introduction to the laws of Kashrus, to stick with the laws of Kashrus, so we will be zocha to that Nevuah, directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now we are moving on to Vort number 4. This is going to be a message similar to the second Vart Torah in talking about the halachas of what's kosher and not, and is known. What's a kosher animal? Komafresis parsa, it's a split hoof. Mala geira bebehema osa tochelu, and it chews its cud. Those are the two requirements that we have that we're going to be discussing, split hooves and chews its cud. So in fact, this is a really interesting Dvar Torah. The Divrei Bina says as follows, that this isn't only talking about what are the simanim, what are the signs of a kosher animal, but it's also the signs of a kosher Jew as well. What does a kosher Jew do? So whenever he's making a decision, whenever he's about to do something, embark on something, take on something new, whatever it may be, he's going to act carefully with zihirus. Before taking that first step, he's going to make an analysis. Is this the proper step to take? Is this going to be something that a Kadosh Baruch Hu will agree with? Am I going to increase Kavod Shemayim with this? Or if I act, will I chas b'shalom do the opposite? So before acting, make a deep analysis. You have to be wary. You have to be careful in every step you take. And not only that, but once you start, you have to continue analyzing. You have to have checkpoints along the way. Am I doing the right thing? And in fact, these two simanim, these two signs of what a kosher animal are, reflect these two steps. What's ma'ala geira? Ma'ala geira, does the animal chew its cud? Does it chew over and over? Does it do in-depth analysis? It's not only acting in haste and swallowing, but it's thinking first and analyzing. Let me chew on it. Let me chew it well before I embark on something. And not only that, but even once you've gone forward with a decision, that's mafris parsa, that is talking about those hooves are split. When you're walking, when you're acting, take half steps. Take baby steps. That's mafris parsa. Do it slowly and analyze along the way if indeed this is the right decision or not. We are moving forward to number 5 and talking about what are the kosher birds and what are the not the kosher birds. And one that is listed, we're in Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud Tes, Ves HaChasida. Rashi explains this is the stork. The stork is one of the animals that are not kosher. Other posts can disagree. Is it the stork? Is it not the stork? Rashi says as follows. Why is it called the chasida? Chasida is something positive. A chasid. That's a positive character trait. So osa chasidus im chevro sea b'mazonas, because the stork gives charity. When it comes to its friends, it gives food. It has a friend, another stork that needs food. It's there for them. So we have a very important question to ask on this. According to the Ramban, the reasons why for the birds that they are not kosher is because they are mean. They are achzari. These are birds that have bad character traits. The vulture, etc. These are birds that don't have good character, and accordingly they are treif. So the chasida, the stork, is listed here, and we're saying, why is it called a chasida? Because it does chesed to others. So why is it listed on the list of treif animals? Because they're mean, they have bad character traits, if we're saying that it does have good character traits. And the Chidush Harim answers beautifully. If you look at the Chazal, if you look at Rashi, what does he say? It's called a Chasida because it does chesed to its friends. It's not saying that it does chesed to everyone. Somebody who's only there to do chesed to the friends, to other storks, to the people he likes, that's not a chesed. That's achzarius. That's being mean. Somebody else needs food, but you're going to only give it to the people that you like, to only the other storks, only your friends, but not other people. That's a quasi-chesed, but that's not a real chesed. That's not somebody who has a big heart, and accordingly, that is why the chasida, despite the fact that that stork does chesed, but it's such a limited chesed, and it's mean to other people, that is why it's listed on the treif animals. And continuing, now we are going on to our sixth and final Dvar Torah. This is Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Lamed Gimel. This is talking about Tuma and Tahara issues. And it says, called Kli Cheres, if you have an earthenware Kli, you have an earthenware vessel, and it's talking about the Tuma. How does it become Tame? It's very unique. The earthenware vessel only becomes Tame if something Tame enters it, enters from the top, the receptacle itself, where it holds things. But an earthenware vessel will not become Tame from the side, from the outside, only from the inside.
not the outside. And we contrast that to kli matechas, a metal bowl, for example, a metal kli, a metal vessel, that is metame not only from the inside, if something tame enters from the inside, but also if it is touched on the outside as well. So what's the distinction? Why a kli cheres is metame only from the inside and the kli matechas also from the outside? And the Rebbe Mekatz, the Kutzker Rebbe explains as follows. There's a fundamental difference between the materials. Something that's made of cheres, something that's made of earthenware, it has zero intrinsic value to it. It has no value. Accordingly, the whole value of that kli, when it's earthenware, is not the material. It's not from the outside, but it's only what it does on the inside. It's what it's hold. What it holds on the inside, that's its value, and accordingly, the tuma can only enter from the inside. However, there's no tuma from the outside. There's no value from the outside. And that contrasts directly with the kli mateches, the metal kli, the metal bowl, that has intrinsic value to it. It's not only what it holds, but the kli itself has value, and accordingly, it can become tuma. It can become, you can make tame not only from the inside, but from touching it with something that's tame on the outside as well. And says the Kutzker Rebbe, and this is the punchline, a person, an individual, a human is comparable to the kli cheres, the first type, the earthenware vessel. Afar min adama, we too are from the ground. We're also from the earth. We also have no intrinsic value. Our bodies have no intrinsic value except what we do with it. What we do with our body, what is contained in the body, good thoughts, learning of Torah, chesed to others, good character traits. If we can fill ourselves, our bodies, our physical bodies, which otherwise have zero value, with tremendous value, then we as people have tremendous value. But it's all about what's on the inside, not what is on the outside. Because truth be told, this body has no intrinsic value. It's the value that we build up from within. Thank you so much for listening.